v. United States.
Good morning. Please, the court. I'm Herbert E. Banagher. I represent Ms. Clerk, Lorna Louise Clerk, who has since been deported to Jamaica after 30 years in the United States.
Then is this case moot?
No, it's not. Not under the Immigration Act, not under 2255 or Coram Nobis. Actually, the 1996 Act says that even if you're removed, the proceedings can still continue if you win. You come back, which is what we're hoping here.
So you're hoping to set aside this whole underlying conviction so she wouldn't have the lifetime bar to returning that
exactly.
She has.
Exactly.
Now.
We'll just file and get another green card and get her back in here.
But the problem, I mean, where I want you to start is why isn't this case untimely? It looks like a 2255 to me, since she was still under supervised release at the time you filed, so she was in custody for purposes of 2255, but the filing was more than a year. So why
Very
is it late?
Very good question. She didn't know that there was an effective assistance of counsel till the immigration locked her up. After she served her 14 months, she was going to go home, but the immigration service, ICE, put a detainer on her. It was when she was then held by ICE until she was going to be deported that she says, what?
Well, so this is essentially you're presenting an equitable tolling argument, because it certainly is late, and you're saying that she has an excuse for it to being late. That's not the way the district court looked at it, but I think at best it's an equitable tolling.
Yes, and the law provides for such an equitable tolling because the 2255 and Coram Nobis reliefs does allow for extraordinary circumstances. And it is an equitable tolling, you're correct.
So, but I don't understand. She's actually better off than some of the people in the pre-Padilla period because her, I mean, you know, I realize there was a little overlap, but her lawyer actually says, it's a little bit vague, but says there might be immigration consequences, right?
That's not enough under Padilla. Padilla makes
well,
it
I know it's not under Padilla, but I'm saying in terms of the equities, if we're really just in this squishy area of equitable tolling, she's got a bit of a heads up about this.
Yes, and I agree, but the immigration laws are so complex I don't even understand all of it, and I've been doing it for 23 years.
How many?
23 years.
Oh, you look good.
And just as you learn it, they'll come up with something else. So.
No, I realize they're Byzantine, as are the habeas laws, and so when they intersect, it's really amazing. But the fact is, they're also fairly harsh, each of these areas of law. And I'm not at all sure. I mean, but at least if you agree that it's equitable tolling, we would just have to see if it's extraordinary enough.
And even if I agree with that, there's a second prong of our petition. This is both a 2255 and the writ of error coram nobis.
Harmless. She couldn't have been. She wouldn't have been acquitted
of the charge.
Yeah. Didn't make any sense for her to. She'd get a heavier sentence if she went to trial.
Okay.
To plead guilty, realistically.
I can address that realistically, Your Honor. And what it is that deportation to some people is a faith worse than death.
That I know, but she's going to be deported anyway, whether she's sentenced to 20 years or 14 years, right? Or would she rather be sentenced to 20 years because she went to trial? Because that would delay her deportation by 6 years?
Your Honor, what I'm saying is, during the plea negotiation, I've represented clients.
In her position, what choice did she have but plead guilty?
And that's what I'll explain.
So being told that, you know, you're going to be deported at the end isn't going to make any difference, because if she goes to trial, she's going to get a longer prison sentence.
And let me just add, if you think because, you know, her part of this was $8,000 or whatever, the entire scheme was more than $250,000, and she's jointly and severably liable for it. So I don't see how any amount of negotiation in a plea agreement could have gotten the numerical amount low enough.
First and foremost, nobody had ever known how much was the loss to Walmart, because Walmart never even returned anybody's call as to how much they actually lost. It was never agreed upon. Walmart never even returned anybody's call. That's one. Two, joint and several liability, the depth of her guilt, all that could have been resolved. All we were asking is that she be given the chance to understand what she's dealing with. As criminal...
I don't see how it could be resolved, though. I mean,
Okay, this is all I'm saying. A very narrow point I'm trying to make to the court. I've represented, I've gone to criminal court and said, I'm an immigration lawyer for this person, during a negotiation, and say, hey, my client would rather be in jail for 5 years if you agree to this than go to jail for 1 year and be deported. She could have said, we could have maybe convinced the prosecutor that since she's a minor participant and she had agreed to cooperate with them and she had done all these things, that if they, in light of the fact that she's lived here for 30 years and her three generations live here, please stipulate that since we never know how much she actually received, that it's under 10,000 and she'll take a longer sentence. She would have done that happily. She would have stayed in jail for 5 years. And if there is a chance that the prosecutor would have agreed to that. We will never know now. Please, I mean all the time, people kill people and walk away because they cooperate with the government. Anything is possible. And that's all I'm saying. She never had that chance.
You can save the rest of your time if you want.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Hines?
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. The District Court's denial of the defendant's collateral attack on her conviction should be affirmed for multiple reasons, the first of which Judge Wood started to ask about, and that's timeliness. It's clear that the 2255 petition that she filed was untimely. It was more than a year after the conviction became final. And there were no new facts that came up after the conviction became final that would have allowed her to file her petition at the date that she did.
So Mr. Benugo says that only when she gets out of prison does she realize the draconian nature of the immigration consequences. So he thinks equitable tolling or something like that. I actually think he thinks that the date starts then, but I can't quite see that. But it's something.
I agree with Your Honor that doesn't start a new date at that point. She knew at the time that she pled guilty what advice she had received from her attorney. And as has been already mentioned, one of the things that she was told by her attorney is that there may be some immigration consequences from your pleading guilty.
The date when she pleads guilty?
Sure. She pled guilty. And, yeah, there's some confusion in there, in part because there are a number of different dates that are mentioned in counsel's brief. And, in fact, there's an incorrect date on the signature page of the plea agreement. But she actually pled guilty on August 20th, 2008. I believe it says 2009 on the signature page, but you can see from when it was docketed and the things that happened after that it was actually 2008.
And the immigration laws have not changed materially since then, if I'm remembering correctly. I mean, the aggravated felony business was all in there. And
right.
Yeah.
It was.
Let's just assume for a moment that her attorney gave her no warning at all about immigration consequences. Are there cases out there that a mention of immigration consequences in a pre-sentence report is sufficient warning?
Judge, I don't know. I haven't researched that in particular, and so I don't know if there are or not. But you do allude to another factor in this case, which is she got not only some notice from her attorney before she pled guilty that there would be immigration consequences, but the pre-sentence report also says that there are possible immigration consequences. So two times before she actually was sentenced did she know that. So, again, that goes to the timing of, you know, when she had all the knowledge that she needed to know as to whether or not there had been any ineffective assistance or any claim that she could possibly make.
So don't you think, though, the fact that Padilla comes out and her lawyer seems to be asleep at the switch, I mean, nothing happens in the wake of Padilla, and she's not actually sentenced until after that case is out, which is why we don't have to worry about Chaidez or any of the rest of these things.
Right, there's no retroactivity question.
No retroactivity question. Shouldn't the lawyer have jumped right on it and said, wait a minute, maybe there's something here?
Judge, I'm not privy to what the lawyer said to her before. I mean, we know from her own admission in her pleadings.
But I'm saying, wouldn't it be ineffective performance not to do that? I mean, a blockbuster case comes out from the Supreme Court, at least for the immigration bar, and the lawyer doesn't do anything?
Not necessarily. In fact, I don't agree that he was ineffective in terms of not telling her that she definitely would be deported. That's the gravamen of what the defense is saying.
Yeah, right. Maybe and inevitably, which is a pretty big difference.
Right. But Padilla itself talks about how, you know, immigration laws, as you've discussed with counsel, is very, very complicated, and the average defense attorney doesn't know very much about it at all. And we can't hold defense attorneys responsible for knowing all the intricacies of immigration law.
That's a bit inconsistent with Padilla, it seems to me.
No, Judge, I think, as I set out in my brief, in Padilla, it talks about how in certain cases, such as in the facts of Padilla itself, where the statute was very clear that deportation was going to follow conviction, that the attorney should have advised counsel or advised his client that he was going to be deported.
Right.
But the court also, in the majority opinion even, says that in other cases it's not so clear, and it's sufficient for the attorney to tell the client that there may be consequences. And that's exactly what happened here. And again, this is a case where it's not so clear. If you read Padilla talks about, you know, it contrasts cases in which the statute on its face basically says you're going to be deported, as opposed to cases in which it talks about broad classes of cases. And this is one of those broad classes of cases where, you know, an aggravated felony, it's not apparent until you do a lot more digging into the immigration law as to what an aggravated felony is and whether or not it applies to this defendant. So
I'm not sure it's that opaque. I just have to say we see plenty of aggravated felony cases, and it's pretty clear most of the time that it is an aggravated felony.
Well, as I said, in our view, Judge, we think that there's actually no performance deficiency, that the defense attorney did give adequate notice to the client. In addition, she utterly fails, as Judge Posner was alluding to before, on the other side of the other problem of Strickland,
prejudice,
as far as prejudice. There's simply no way. I mean, the evidence was overwhelming in this case.
What was your evidence of the 265,000?
There was a great deal of documentary evidence as far as that's concerned, that pinpointed that exact amount.
Was that presented at the sentencing hearing?
Yes, it was. Mm-hmm. Well, I'm pretty sure it was. In any event, it wasn't disputed.
It's in the PSR.
It's certainly in the PSR. It was part of the plea agreement. Both parties agreed. That was part of the recitation of the facts by the government attorney at the plea that the defendant agreed to. There was no dispute among the parties at all that the total loss to the victim was $260,000. And as I've argued, and as I believe Your Honors even suggested, it doesn't really matter how much she gets out of that. I mean, the loss to the victim was $260,000, and she's jointly liable, and she's culpable and responsible for that entire loss. So, again, she wouldn't have gotten anything out of going to trial had she made that choice, other than a longer sentence, as Judge Posner said. So on the merits, she loses, but I think you can resolve this case even before reaching the merits, both on the timeliness and the waiver issues that have been presented to the court. If you have any other questions, I'd be glad to answer them. Otherwise, I'd ask that you affirm the decision of the district court. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Hines. And Ms. Igbenugo, do you have anything further?
With you, Your Honor. What I speak to clearly is benefit of the bargain to address the issue of the 2255 timeliness. Recall that now it's either 2255 or quorum nobis. Quorum nobis by 28 U.S.C. 1651A. And my client has since been deported. This is a continuation of the proceedings. She's no longer in custody. So if the court finds that...
But the custody determination is made at the time of filing. So the problem I have with reaching quorum nobis is that you don't use that writ to the extent it still exists unless 2255 is unavailable.
Exactly. But I think that if you go back to our briefs, and I cannot point that, I think we made it very clear that this is certainly a person that did not know anything. If you know the person involved, she's a meek lady she could not, she was not very, very, very wise or very bright. Otherwise, she would not have even fallen into this scheme. And the person that was the lead in that scheme gave her whatever he gave her. And if you looked at the pre-sentence investigation report, at the time this was concluded, she had nothing. She had nothing but the clothes on her back. She had no property, no bank account, no nothing. She made no money. That's why we're saying the $10,000, she might not have even made $10,000. We'll never know. And clerk, she declined at the time to provide any oral or written statement regarding her involvement in the offense, and the government did not provide a victim impact statement. Nobody knows what Walmart lost. This was all speculation based on receipts they put together. And the final point I wanted to make, all I'm saying is people have committed heinous crimes, but the government gets into a plea agreement with them to help get other people, even terrorists. Now, she had a chance. She already had a chance of saying, hey, look at what has happened here. I'll go to jail for 5 years. Okay, it's possible that they would have let her go to jail for 5 years and stipulated to under $10,000 so she can get out of this. I do this every day in criminal court. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Igbenugo. Sorry. Okay, next case for.